Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante and my co-host, Mr. Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. Again, this week starts off warm, nice in the 70s, and then as the week progresses, we get rain and we get back to the 50s. It's like, I don't ask much. I don't ask for perfection. It's much like I ask for college basketball officials. I don't ask for perfection. I just ask for consistency.
Well, it sounds like your weather out your way is like ours. We're now up into the 70s and decent weather, but it's not going to last long. So let's stop talking weather. And let's also, we determined this before we started recording, we will also not talk baseball today.
Understood.
It's your first place Braves, my last place Mets. We will discuss neither of those, Dustin. Sorry to tell you that.
That's fine. I have your phone number. I can text you anytime the Braves win to remind you.
Well, I'm looking at Dustin right now. He has a grin from ear to ear. He's allowed. So, as I always tell people, Dustin, it's like when we have to have a golf reference. And when I'm with my buddies and golfing and I do something right on a hole early, you know, maybe birdie a hole, whatever, I do the happy dance. I rub their face in it. I do all of those things. And they're quick to remind me, you better be careful. There's a lot of golf left. I said, that's the point. You brag when you can.
Yes. Yes.
So if things go well early, you talk trash. That's what you do. Because you don't know if you'll be able to do it the rest of the round, Dustin. So
exactly,
remember that,
right.
That those words of wisdom. All right, let's move on. Let's actually talk about some football. And during this off season, even spring camp is over, but there's still lots to talk about, Dustin. Starting with, and it's something we've talked about for a while, it's been gaining momentum. It looks like the NCAA is going to implement the five seasons over 5 years. You get to play 5 years over a five-year time span. Go ahead. What do you think?
So this is interesting because what I'm going to say is probably going to sound unfair and maybe not make a ton of sense. To me, 5 for 5 makes a lot more sense for football than maybe the other sports. Because already in college football, as it stands right now, you can play 4 games and then you can play in the postseason. So you could essentially play, I mean, I think you can only play 1 game. I'm not sure what the rule is in terms of like the playoff or whatever. I haven't had to worry about that covering Purdue. But so you're essentially, you can play 5 games of a, you know, 13-game season. So a third to a half somewhere in there. Of the season. So I think it makes a lot of sense, especially with the physicality involved in football, the number of games that some of these teams do have to play. Now you're getting upwards of 15, 16, 17 games that teams may have to play to win a national championship. I think it makes a lot of sense on that front, because how often do you see true freshmen get on the field and play? And if they are good enough, they're probably only going to stay 3 years and go to the NFL draft anyway. So to me, it makes a lot of sense for the football side of these things. On the basketball side, I don't like basketball, baseball, softball, some of these other sports. Again, I think probably not going to impact too many players, because you're probably going to see players who will get the opportunity to go to the NBA or MLB or whatever, you know. But to me, I would almost rather just see you get you get 5 years and maybe you implement some sort of redshirt rule where you can play 10 games or something of a college basketball season. I know that sounds contradictory to what I just feel like 5 years is too long in terms of college basketball, because you're talking about at some point probably 18, 19 year olds playing against 23. And I think the age limit that they're going to implement is 24 years old. So you're talking about 23, 24 year olds playing against 18, 19 year olds. I know it's not a huge age discrepancy from what we currently see. But I do feel like that that's a little bit of a difference. So I actually do like it for the football side of things. I don't know if it makes sense for other sports, but I think if you didn't do it for all sports across the NCAA, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Well, I'm actually, first of all, football is all that really matters to people. Okay.
Correct.
If you talk to people, they'll even tell you, oh, the new college football rule, you know, not even realizing it's across all sports. What I like about it is you're looking at it, and rightfully so, how it affects the players. I think this is more about how it affects the programs themselves, meaning it simplifies the rules as opposed to, well, gee, we're looking out for the best interests of the players. I don't think that thought crossed anybody's mind. I think the thought was, how does it protect the programs who are dealing with some of these players, you know, having a sixth, seventh, even eighth year of eligibility? I think that's what they're trying to eliminate. And you're right, you know, some of the details of the rule are the clock starts when your high school graduation or age 19.
Yeah.
So that you would be done at like age 23 or 4 or 24 or something like that. Well, now you have players who are 26 and 27 years old still playing. And, you know, for the good majority of the athletes, the ones who are really good only play 3 years and move on to the NFL, or in the NBA case, maybe 1, 2, or 3 years. The players who aren't very good move on before 5 years happens. It's just that little sweet spot in there that where the players themselves, let's face it, if I'm a player who's not going to play in the NFL and never make NFL money, it gives me an extra year to make NCAA NIL money.
Yeah, and part of me wonders if you get to a point where, and you could probably currently do this anyway, but now, like, you know, you can have as many kids. You can't have as many kids. You can have up to 15 scholarships. I'm going to say this on the basketball side, because I think it's, but even on the football side, you would have situations where if you're not that good, a coach may say, you need to enter the portal, or maybe your career's over here. Because there's, just, especially on the football side, there's just too much at stake to have that roster spot for that many years if you're not performing at a level. Now, there's certainly going to be some players, you know, there could be a situation where you have a guy who doesn't play for 3 years and maybe, you know, he makes a big jump up, or that position group is lacking, or they need some, you know, a veteran voice, and maybe he gets to play for 2 years. I can see situations like that. But as you mentioned, like, if you're good enough and you come in and play as a true freshman, you're probably going to go to the NFL after your third season. And I think in some situations there may be guys who, after that fourth year, because I've talked to people who have played high level college sports, and even me as a former like D3 athlete, you reach a point after that fourth year where you're just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I do wonder how many players, I think there are some people that are going to take advantage of it, but would we see, it'll be interesting. Will a majority of the people who play college football or college basketball, or will they take advantage of those 5 full years? Or, you know, we see this actually in volleyball quite a bit, where there's some people who graduate in 3 years and they're just like, I don't need to play that fourth year. It's just an interesting thing that I think you may see at some point down the road, where people may have an extra year of eligibility left, but they're like, I'm going to move on from this.
Well, in the non-revenue sports, which is the majority of student athletes, if they're not getting compensated for them, you know what? They're like you and I, Dustin. You get done with your years of college, you're anxious to go out in the real world and start making money, start your actual chosen career. So I don't think these rules that are implemented are mostly about the revenue sports, mostly football, but also basketball. So that's where the meaning is. That was where the intent is. And, you know, just taking a little different angle on this, what I find fascinating is there, of course, was a presidential executive order where this was one of the things put in there. There's been a lot of talk about this for a while, and I've had these discussions with people. Oh, the executive order doesn't even really mean anything. It could be ignored. Congress involved, that big meeting at the White House. But what those things did, Dustin, is I think it really raised the awareness and it got the public behind this type of rule.
Yeah, probably. I would say, like, to me, this is going to be just my one quick thought. Like, to me, Congress has enough problems. Can you just focus on things that are important and not this? That's number one to me. But I do think that I think if you look at this, because you're correct, like football drives so much of this. And to me, it just makes sense because there was a point where they had proposed you could get 8 or 9 redshirt. I don't remember what the number was, but basically you could play in 8 or 9 games and still preserve a redshirt year. So at that point, it's like, why wouldn't you just give them 5 years of eligibility? Because that just makes sense. So to me, I think football is such a physically demanding sport. If this were the old days where you're only playing 13 games, that's the max, then maybe I would say stick with the 4 redshirt rule. But you have, again, there are teams that are in November and they may be halfway through their schedule now because of, you know, again, the college football playoff, a conference championship game, what have you. That's a lot of games. And not only is it a lot of games for one player, but if that player is playing, you know, look at Ohio State, for example. If Ohio State is consistently in the college football playoff, that's a player playing X amount of games extra than some of these other teams. And that wears on your body. It probably doesn't make a difference in some of these other non-revenue sports where like volleyball, basketball, softball, baseball. But in football, every hit you take is one less that you're going to be able to take in the future. So I think this just makes sense. It gives you better depth. It allows players to and it kind of gives coaches, they don't have to teeter on that line of, boy, do I want to save this kid's red shirt for potentially another game? Do I want to burn a red shirt? It just allows them now to throw guys into the mix whenever they see fit.
Oh, Dustin, we're not finished with this conversation because you brought up some really good points. And, you know, to me, some of this is simply about simplifying the rule. You know, I hear you with the discussion of, well, if we make you're allowed 9 games in a redshirt year, plus you're allowed to play in the playoff game, a team that could end up playing 16 or 17 games, you could get your redshirt year and still play 13 games. So it made sense to just go the whole way with that fifth year of eligibility. But we'll pick up this conversation right after we take this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number 2 on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 2. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about the new rule in college sports. See, I was even ready to say in college football, Dustin. but it's in college sports where it's 5 years to play 5 seasons now. And some of the things that they had talked about implementing, when Dustin brought up, well, changing you play 4 games and get a red shirt. Now they were talking 9 games and get a red shirt. Just let them play that extra year. And I think at that point, what you're doing is you're giving something to the players. You're giving them that fifth year. The one other point you brought up, the idea, I was the first one who brought up about government intervention, the president's executive order, and Congress talking about, you know, having different bills that they're throwing around. On your point, which I agree with 1,000%, agree politically, less government is better. Keep the government out of it.
Yeah.
The only problem with it, though, is if not them, who?
Yeah.
The NCAA has shown they're incapable. And if there's a point where, you know, both red and blue could agree on something, just do it already. So I really didn't mind the intervention in this issue as much as some other folks. But as in anything else, Dustin, the devil's often in the details. So some of the things, details that appear to be going on with the ruling, clock starting at either high school graduation or age 19, that would prevent a lot of the problem of 26-year-olds still playing.
Yeah.
Although they didn't state it explicitly, I think it's still Trinidad Chambliss, the guys who played in junior college or other places, they're like, oh, that shouldn't count against my eligibility. Well, the fact is, whether it even does or doesn't, that age 19 will factor into it.
Right.
So they're covering some of that. Red shirts don't count anymore. It's irrelevant. Oh, you're hurt. Hey, you still have four other years. Military service, religious missions, and pregnancy are the exceptions that they're going to make. I think you could be supportive of each one of those, Dustin. My question is, what's going to be the issue that takes this to court?
Man, that is a great question. Some sleazebag lawyer that just wants to make some money off of some kids. I don't know, because I like this idea. If my pitch has always been, if you're going to do this, then no waivers, like 0% waivers.
Yes.
And I don't know. I feel like a lot of this is me just an amateur looking at this from the outside. I have no legal background whatsoever. I have somebody who reads legal documents for me if I get in that situation, right? So I would bet that a lot of the current lawsuits and things stem from the NCAA's arbitrary decision to hand out waivers and not hand out waivers. And so there were times when, and I'm going to use this example from many, many years ago, when Justin Fields transferred from Georgia to Ohio State, was granted immediate eligibility. There was a kid from Georgia who transferred to Illinois. His name was, I believe it was Luke Ford, if I remember correctly. He was a tight end. He wanted to be closer to his family because his grandparents were ill, I believe was the story. He transferred to the closest university with it, like, in order to get a waiver, you had to transfer within so many miles of a school.
Yeah.
Well, Illinois was the closest, but it was outside of that mile range. So Luke Ford was not granted an automatic waiver to play that next season, had to sit out. This is still when you had to sit out a season.
Right.
Justin Fields, with no explanation, was granted immediate eligibility. So
there was an explanation. It was a lousy one, but there was an explanation.
Oh, I don't remember it. What was it?
Was that not the one where they said either his family or somebody was, there were racist comments made in the stands?
Oh, that might have been it. But yeah. What was weird is so to that point, and I don't know I clearly don't remember the whole story. God, it's been almost 10 years now. But the point is that I believe he said that wasn't the reason he transferred.
And you could be very right. I'm trying to remember if that was the case. And regardless, I think your point about there should not be any exceptions outside of the ones that we just mentioned. But I think what will happen is the first guy who has is out 2 years with an injury.
Yeah.
Will definitely appeal it. That will happen. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. The one thing I would say is if the NCAA says we're not doing these are the three rules, we don't care if you get injured or not. If you don't allow anybody to have that extra year of eligibility, I don't know how a lawyer would be able to, like, because there's no other case where you could say it's unfair because, you know, X, Y, and Z. There's no, there would be no other example of a player getting an exemption for a certain reason. The NCAA would have to be consistent on this. And so when I say no waivers, I say no waivers whatsoever.
So the only problem would be, and it's, you know, courtroom shopping where, you know, Trinidad Chambliss, they tried to take it to court in Mississippi, okay?
Yeah.
Where they're more likely to get the sympathetic judge. And that's the type of thing that you get, especially if it's an elected judge who doesn't want to rule that the state's star quarterback is ineligible.
Yeah.
And Dustin, with this, what we've been seeing over the last several months, at least, is some of this momentum. As I mentioned, for the five seasons over 5 years, we're seeing reports going out about it, Congress, presidential executive order. The other one that's gaining so much momentum and really affecting the game negatively, most people would agree, is the portal. And that rule that everyone seems to want to implement is get it down to one, you're allowed one free transfer. The second transfer, you have to sit out a year. I think that's gaining as much momentum, but I think that one would be even tougher in a court of law.
Yeah, I think so too. But that's the rule I think I would really like. I think most people would really like that rule, because what have we talked about already on this show since the end of spring practices? How nice is it that you know who's on your team going into next season, right? And I think if you narrow that down to just one transfer, you're going to severely cut down on the number of kids that do transfer out. And so I think that makes it better for the fans. And here's the one thing that I'll say, Jim, the thing that kind of irritates me in these situations is when people are like, well, this isn't about the fans, it's about the players, which is accurate. The players are the ones who, but without the fans, you're not playing anything, right? Like at some point the fans' perspective does have to matter. And that's just my opinion. But if Jim and Dustin started a charge and said, we're not going to watch Penn State football, guess what? At some point, Penn State's going to shut it down. They're going to have to, right? So I think that when people say this isn't about what fans want, I feel like there's a little bit of, like to me, it just is really irritating, because without fans, you would not get this opportunity. So.
Well, I'm going to take this out to the real world and try to make the analogy and what you're talking about. Now, the ruling, the general consensus is the right to make a living, make money. Okay. Hey, if I'm, you know, sitting on the bench, not making money at Penn State, I should be allowed to transfer to Pitt to make more money. You're reducing my opportunity to go make a living. And that's how things are ruled. In the real world, the closest I could come to something like this are non-compete clauses in people's employment contract. And by the way, the court system is usually much more sympathetic to the employee than they are to the company. The analogy being sympathetic to the player versus the universities. And you're talking about the fans. Hey, if my company builds widgets and me leaving my widget company to go across the street to compete, what about the widget customers? If Jim's not there, you know, making those precise widgets, aren't they suffering, Dustin? No, the court is worried about the individual employee. And maybe it's not a perfect analogy, but I think that's the way the court systems have been looking at this with the transfer. You're limiting the players' opportunities if you make them sit out a year.
Well, here's another real world situation. I've had to sign them. I don't know about you, but you could sign a non-compete clause and say, and I don't even, so here's the other thing I would say. I'm in favor of the one-time transfer rule. The other thing I would say is if you can't get that, if you can say, okay, we can't limit that, but here's what we can do. They're not going to do this. You could have some sort of non-compete in these contracts these kids sign where it says, okay, you can't play. I'm not going to limit you to play. You can still play in the Big Ten. You can't be on our schedule the following season. So if I'm at Penn State and I look and I say, boy, I want to go to Illinois. Sorry, can't go to Illinois. We play them next season, but you could go to Indiana because we don't play Indiana next season. I think that you could put some restrictions on, and maybe some people would feel a little bit better about that. I think there is some frustration too with like just teams poaching the best talent. Like you look at Texas Tech. I mean, we won't get into Brendan Sorsby stuff this, but you can just go and you can poach the best play. Well, Cincinnati and Texas Tech are in the same conference. I don't know if they're playing each other this coming season, but that would be a way to maybe again stymie some of that a little bit. I don't know. There's a lot of things you can do on this transfer portal thing, but to your point, I don't know how much would be able to be held up in court.
And this is where government intervention, and I'm not even sure if that's good enough, but if the government intervenes and says this is the way it is, it makes it's one more layer to enforce it. And just the last note about, gee, Penn State's not playing Indiana, so you could transfer there. What if the two teams end up in the conference championship game?
Yeah.
So it's, you're still competing with Indiana for the Big Ten championship. Maybe it can't be in my conference or on our out-of-conference schedule. All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter two. Lots more still to come.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter three. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. We're talking about some new rules that are coming to the NCAA, other rules that, fingers crossed, if they're coming. Segment two, talking about the transfer portal, which seems to be gaining momentum, is one free transfer, go for a second transfer, you have to sit out a year. I think most folks are in agreement that would be a good rule that would end a lot of the things. The one exception is they say you'd also get a second transfer as a grad student, free transfer, which does make some sense academically. Again, sure. I'm not sure football players are as concerned about that, but I think in a lot of sports, you get your undergraduate degree at one school. What you're looking for in a graduate degree may not be available at your school, or you just want to go to a specific school for that. So I get that. I understand that. But Dustin, I'll ask you the same question about this that I did for the 5 years to play five seasons. What do you think is the odds on best bet for this to end up in court?
Yeah, I would, my guess would be, now if they, it probably depends on what kind of rules and guidelines they implement along with the one transfer rule, but my guess would be player transfers because he wants to after his freshman year. 2 years later, the next program he's transferred to, either the coach is fired or coach leaves for another job or whatever, and player is stuck because he either has to sit, and at some point, like if you're cutting into your eligibility, your 5 years. So that would be my guess as to a situation that would be first, sort of situation that, or some sort of, I hate to say this because I don't like to make light of the situation, but there was also a period of time where I think players used mental health as a get out of jail free card.
Yeah.
And so you don't like, I think that there are some legitimate concerns with that. I'm not trying to minimize mental health and anything like that, but I do believe that there were some players who probably took advantage of that, and the NCAA saying, well, we don't want to step in that and get into an even bigger lawsuit. So my guess would be player knows he can't transfer a second time, I'm going to claim some sort of, you know, mental health issue, or, you know, being closer to family who, you know, is going through a difficult time or something along those lines. Or the other situation where player transfers the first time, gets the free pass, then his coach gets fired or leaves at a second program, and he wants to be able to have that flexibility to transfer out because he didn't expect this to happen.
Yeah, I do believe that coach changing is a legitimate, wait, let me take that back. I'm not sure it's a legitimate reason, you know, you committed there, but I think it is the one that will be brought up. And where I think it could even be more legitimate, now, this isn't a perfect example because he only he didn't transfer until the coaching change at Penn State. But let's say Ethan Grunkmeyer, the quarterback, transferred to Penn State for the opportunities, whatever, his free transfer. And then Franklin leaves, Matt Campbell comes in, and Matt Campbell brings Rocco Beck with him. All of a sudden, Ethan Grunkmeyer's ability to play is reduced. So this isn't what he signed up for. So you can look at that, and I can see that's I could be sympathetic to that discussion.
I could be too, but this is the point I would get with that. Would be like, well, what were you doing after your first transfer? If this was your second time, why did you transfer the first time? People talk about this with the quarterbacks, and I understand to an extent, like, there's only one guy that can play that position. Maybe you want to maximize your opportunity. I totally understand that. But also at some point, like, are you going to sue because you didn't get the job? Like, are you going to sue because you didn't get the starting job? That's essentially what you're asking. So, like, stay and compete. There's a part of me that's like, why are you moving on when you could stay and compete and get this and win the job? If you're that confident in yourself, to me, some of this stuff is like throwing in the towel. If I'm Matt Campbell, so let me put it like, if I'm Matt Campbell and I bring Rocco Beck, who's a multi-year starter, he's going to, and I have a conversation with you and be like, hey man, this is going to be our starting quarterback. Probably nothing you can do aside from him getting hurt that you're going to win the job. Totally understand that. But there was a situation where if I'm a new coach, I bring in three guys that I have no, some guys just leave automatically. And it's like, well, why didn't you stay and compete with those other three guys they brought in? Maybe you could have been that starter, but you didn't want to compete for it. Did you have a comp? How did that go? And so I think sometimes kids take the path of least resistance. And this is me being an old man yelling at the clouds, where that's not how life works. Like, sometimes you're going to have to face some adversity at some point in your life. So I can see both sides of that. I'm just, if it's a two transfer rule, I am less sympathetic if your coach leaves and you want that immediate eligibility because you already transferred once and you knew what you were getting yourself into.
Well, that's where the, now James Franklin could have stuck around and still brought in Rocco back, okay?
Yeah, that's, sure, yeah.
You know, could legitimately happen, and you could say, hey, that's exactly the, you're now in the same situation, Ethan Grunkmeyer, didn't have to happen with the coach. But I think the argument there is, hey, you transferred in, you said, because James Franklin convinced me this is the best place for me. You know, it's buyer beware at that point.
Yeah.
If James Franklin, whoops, sorry, kid. Now, when you have a situation, though, where my coach leaves, the other coach, you know, we all said it prior to Rocco Beck coming in. Ethan Grunkmeyer looked pretty good his last several games at Penn State. I think most Penn State fans really wanted him to come back. But it was on this very show, we said, hey, if Rocco Beck comes, Grunkmeyer's gone. Yeah. Because it's as I'm stating it, Matt Campbell doesn't need to state it that Rocco Beck is the starter. And, you know, the problem, some might say, well, at that point, you know, if Matt Campbell would be honest with Ethan Grunkmeyer and say, hey, you aren't going to start, so I will release you.
Yeah.
But I think you're asking a little too much of these coaches. Because you know what? I still need a backup quarterback, Dustin.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, Ethan was there. He didn't transfer into Penn State, right? He started.
Correct. I was just using that as an example of something I know. No.
Right. So I think if I'm a player, I think that's a totally valid reason to transfer. And there's been some guys who maybe stick around 2 or 3 years and like, I just want to go play football. So they're going to go play at Bowling Green. They're going to go play at Nevada, someplace where they can get on the field. I totally understand that mindset. I lose a little bit of sympathy when you know, if I'm at Purdue my freshman year, I'd be like, man, this isn't the place I want to be at. Okay, well, what's the situation? Am I just looking for more playing time? Am I going to transfer to Minnesota thinking I'm going to get more playing time? Then I don't there. Like, to me, why are you transferring? Are you just looking for the easy way out? Are you looking for playing time, or is it legitimately not a good fit? And so again, on that, I just don't have sympathy on that second transfer. I really don't. Like, again, you know the situation that's presented. You can say, okay, I get this one free pass. I get this one pass. If I use it right now, I can't use it again. So I think maybe if you were able to do that, you could say, all right, I stayed at Penn State 2 years. I don't have a path to the starting job. I'm going to use my free pass, and I'm going to go to UNLV, or I'm going to go to Boise State, or maybe it's, if you're at Penn State, maybe it's even just like Illinois or Iowa, and I'm going to go play there, give myself a chance to play for 2 years, and that's going to be my career path. I have no problem with that, but I just run out of sympathy when you, because we have kids who are transferring 4, 5, 6 schools. It's like, what the hell are you doing? None of those credits are transferring.
You know, I think the macro sense here is no doubt that would be better for the game. Okay. That you don't have that many free transfers. But I just wonder, and the problem is it opens Pandora's box. If you bring up that one specific, you know, when it makes sense, Ethan Grunkmeyer theoretically transfers into Penn State with James Franklin. Everything's hunky-dory. And then James Franklin leaves, and in comes a triple option coach. You know, boom, his opportunity is gone. So I just suspect there will be those situations that go to court. And for that one individual,
yeah,
boy, you know, they're a sympathetic situation, but that's just that door opening a little bit. And we all know once the door opens a little bit, it gets burst wide open.
Yeah. I mean, it really does open the floodgates. All it takes is one court case. And then all of a sudden you're going to have a bunch of people flooding to the courts, trying to find a lawyer to represent them.
Yeah, so this is the one that I think will be very difficult. I think it is the important one. And I still go back, Dustin, I wonder if the answer that you would think would not necessarily be challenged in court is these kids signing multi-year contracts. You know, we already have a situation where the schools say, hey, it's a four-year scholarship. We're not going to cut you, okay? That's from the program side. Well, how about the player making a similar commitment? It doesn't have to be the full 4 years. Maybe it's 2 or 3 years. Then you get your free, hey, I only signed a contract for 2 years or 3 years, and when I've used that up, I can move on and still have 2 or 3 years of eligibility.
Right. And I think that's a thing that's coming down the, if it's not already here, like, I think they already do sign contracts, but I don't know how detailed they are. They should be, because these universities have a lot of money. But one of the interesting things, Jim, that's going to happen is, and we have a situation of it right now. I said we weren't going to talk about this, but the Brendan Sorsby situation, like, he's not going to get that money, nor should he. Like, I can't imagine a situation where he gets the money he was promised from Texas Tech based on what happened. There has to be some sort of clause in there that is like, he's not, he ruined his whole football career over 50-cent bets.
Well, I'll tell you what, we weren't going to go down this path, but you brought it up. I think we need to explain to the listeners what's going on with Brendan Sorsby. How about we do that right after this break?
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four of our show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. And Dustin, as you said you weren't going to get into it, but you opened the door, Dustin. You opened the door, so I'm going to kick it wide open. All right? You brought up Brendan Sorsby, and I think for our listeners' benefit, we need to explain what went on with Brendan Sorsby, because I think it hits on a lot of these topics that we're hitting, especially multi-year contracts. He was the quarterback at Cincinnati. He was being compensated. Texas Tech came calling. He transferred Cincinnati to Texas Tech for big money. Allegedly, the contract he had with Cincinnati, he had $1 million buyout. So I was proclaiming this the wave of the future. Boy, the buyout, Cincinnati gets $1 million. Well, Sorsby and his lawyer said, we're not going to pay it. Sue me. Well, Cincinnati sued him. So yeah. That's ongoing. So now he ends up at Texas Tech with the new big contract. Oh, but it turns out he gets tied into a gambling scandal. Apparently, he's been gambling like crazy, which, by the way, is a no-no in college sports. So, Dustin, take it from there on his contract. You know, what happens to his $5 million contract with Texas Tech?
Yeah, I imagine that that's going to be null and void because he did not play a snap for Texas Tech. And Texas Tech is not paying to just have Brendan Sorsby's name on the roster. They're paying for his production.
Go ahead. Well, are they? Pay for play is not legal, Dustin.
Yeah,
that couldn't have been the case. They literally were paying for his name, image, and likeness. Which he can still provide. So... is there behavior clause in his contract?
I have got to believe there's something in there that says if he misrepresents Texas Tech or something, or the company or, you know, whatever, that he is not entitled to that money or will have to pay it back or whatever. I got to imagine that situation is, and here's the other one. And I know he's not an employee. So first of all, I don't think he's going to get his money from Texas Tech. I'm sure there's going to be some sort of lawsuit. If he already received that money or a portion of that money, maybe he hasn't received any of it. I don't know. But I have to imagine that there's going to be some legal issues there. Here's the other thing that I wonder, and I don't know, again, the legality of it. If there are repercussions from the NCAA towards Cincinnati because of this, or Indiana for that matter, because he was technically gambling on Indiana games when he was at Indiana in 2022. This is pre-Kurt Cignetti. Not that that matters. But let's say Indiana gets hit with a fine or some sort of, I don't know if scholarship reduction, because the scholarships really don't matter anymore, but some sort of penalty. Would Indiana want to file a lawsuit against Brendan Sorsby? Would they be able to file a lawsuit against Brendan Sorsby? I don't know the answer to this, but a lot of this with the independent NIL stuff, would those I don't know how any of this works, but I just feel like this is going to be a situation where you're going to start to see the ugly side of NIL, where if you don't, maybe it's not ugly, maybe it's the eye-opening part of NIL, where if you don't do what you're supposed to and you put your school, a company, whatever it is, into a precarious situation, are you then going to be the one who is the defendant in the some sort of lawsuit? And that's another thing that I'm really interested to see how this all plays out, because if Indiana gets hit with any sort of penalty, which I don't know that they will, but would they go after Brennan Sorsby and say, hey, you violated your contract while you were here. We want this NIL money back, or whatever the case might be. It's just going to be a really – because Brennan Sorsby – I promise you this, Jim, Brennan Sorsby is not even close to the only one that's doing this in college athletics.
No doubt about it. Now, the how they penalize, who they penalize, some of this – and again, neither one of us are lawyers, but these programs, their leagues, the NCAA – should get a format, a structure for a contract that works, okay?
Yeah.
The contract that Sorsby signed with Cincinnati, at least one lawyer in the world thinks it's not enforceable, okay? And that happens to be Sorsby's lawyer, saying even though in the contract is specified a buyout clause, we're not paying it, we're refusing to pay it, go ahead, sue us. And for the longest time, schools would not hold the players' feet to the fire because they don't want to gain that reputation.
Yeah.
You know, it would hurt the recruiting the next player. But it's reaching the point. We saw it at Washington when the quarterback chose to leave. They said, we're, you know, going to keep your feet to the fire. And he ended up staying. And I think that is important that schools are starting to do that. Now, what the, you know, you mentioned the contract that he signed with Texas Tech had to have some kind of behavior clause in it. I'm sure it did. But how enforceable is it? How much money have they paid him up front so that he's already collected? So you there's going to be more repercussions to this. But I think what needs to be done, you know, the Big Ten, we just saw the amount of money from the latest year, what they gave out, over distributed over $1 billion to their schools. Yep. The Big Ten, you know what, Tony Petitti, get the format of a contract that works.
Yep.
Have your lawyers go over it completely. And it's like, okay, all the teams in the Big Ten, this is the format you know will be enforceable. Yeah, I get it. You got to still fill in the numbers, amount of money, and maybe is it 2 years, is it 3 years, is it 1 year, whatever.
Yeah.
But the structure of penalties and so on has to be something that is court-proof, and they need to do that.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be what they're going to have to do, because that's going to be the only way for their protection. Because in the past, and I, look, these universities are making a lot of money, so protection's a kind of a loose term here, but in the past, these players weren't making anything, so it wasn't like these were costly situations to them, right? Now you're investing, you know, depending on the player, tens of thousands to millions of dollars in certain student athletes. And so there's got to be some level of like, hey, we gave you $2 million and you are doing this. Like, there's got to be some sort of clause in there, that behavior clause. I don't know what other, I'm sure there's some sort of other legal terms you can throw in there that would protect the school if a kid doesn't ever take a snap for you. And still, like, it's one thing if Brendan Sorsby gets there and he doesn't win the starting job. And it's just like, well, I wasn't as good as you thought. That's not on me. That's on you. Right. As opposed to, I just was being an airhead, broke the rules, and now you're out X amount of dollars. So I, if there wasn't something enforceable in his contract, I can promise you this situation will make schools and NIL suitors kind of rethink that position.
And I think that's a great point, Dustin. And it's now the onus is on the schools, the conferences, the NCAA to protect themselves. You're now multiple years into all of this. We're now into the, you know, second year of the schools themselves could compensate student athletes up to $21 million. And the NIL is over and above that. They've tried to implement the, gee, that's got to be an authentic, you know, legitimate NIL, and they have to try to police that. So, and, you know, that's still, boy, that's going to be, I think, the next big legal issue. If I started, you know, paying a guy $100,000 to show up and sign autographs for 20 minutes, that's not a legitimate, you know, gee, this car dealership is benefiting $100,000 worth because this kid showed up for 20 minutes. But hey, your value is what someone is willing to pay you. That's the other argument, right?
Well, that's kind of always been my, when people have said, you know, it has to be a legitimate, I understand them wanting to make sure that they follow through. So you can't say that, you know, Rocco Becht got paid to do an hour of autographs and he didn't even show up. I understand enforcing that. But the other thing is, like, if you have Joe Schmo's Chevy dealership, car dealership, I won't give out any sponsors, Joe Schmo's car dealership, and say, we believe Rocco Becht is, him being here is worth $50,000 for 1 hour. You and I would probably be like, probably not. But the person could say, you know what? This is a long-term investment. People 3 years from now are going to remember that they came to Joe Schmo's car dealership to get their autograph signed by, or get a Rocco Becht autograph card. And in 3 years, when they need a new car, they're going to come back to us and we're going to profit off of that. So how, I don't know. So that's always been the case to me, is like, how can you, companies are very smart and they would be able to legitimize that. So if I'm a big time Penn State donor, I can legitimize that and say, hey, if I get three cars sold, I'm already making a profit off of that $50,000 I gave him. So, and that one's a little bit harder to police.
It is. And because the value isn't just right there, like, okay, everyone's paying $1,000 for that autograph, and I got at least 50 people to pay $1,000 for the autograph. It's, again, the image of the Joe Schmo's car dealership. Does it help my reputation? And if I'm selling these cars at $50,000 a piece, it's easy to justify that. I think where they would, if it's a pizza joint where they show up for that 20 minutes and they're paid $50,000 or $100,000, wait a minute. I can tie myself into a knot trying to do the math and it's still not going to come out. I think that's where, you know, the NCAA, it's kind of like, you know what, Dustin, the speed limit here is 65 and you were going 66.
Yeah.
But if you're going 105.
Yeah, big difference.
It's pretty easy for me to legitimize that, Dustin, you need to be punished for going 105 in a 65 mile an hour zone. And I think that's the kind of issue you need to find. And we know those things are going on, Dustin. All right. We had planned on a couple other topics. Dustin, they're going to have to wait till next week. Thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate your insight. How about we do it again next week?
That sounds good to me, Jim.
All right. That is it for our show. We'll see you next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.